to Life with Brittany, a Peculiar Podcast. I have a very special guest with me today. He has so many accolades. I really have to get my paper out so I can read them to make sure I get them right. So first things first, he is Rock Hill, South Carolina's Poet Laureate, a 2020 Academy of American Poets Laureate Fellow, National Poet Slam Champion, Director, you see how many I'm already going through. Director of Campus Programming for Student Life. And he's just an all around cool guy, such a great spirit. Please welcome Angela Jeter.
Hey, Brittany, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you having me here. It's awesome.
Yeah, glad that you're here. So we're going to dive into three categories for you today. First things first, you know, we got to talk about poetry and spoken word. Those are both big to us, so I'm excited to, you know, hear your responses to some of the questions that I have for you on that.
For sure.
And then we'll dive into education.
Okay.
And get your insight on that part as well. And then lastly, like I always do with everyone, we learn about the little things about you. So that's kind of how we're going to flow today.
Sounds good.
Okay. So we'll dive right in. First question for you. When did you fall in love with poetry, or when did you become interested in it?
Yeah. This is a great question. So it was in the sixth grade. Her name is Jackson, and she gave us an assignment. And it basically was just kind of just write what you feel in the moment kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I just remember feeling like as a kid that it was good for my voice to make a difference. Like, and it's a matter in that moment. It didn't matter what anybody else was telling me, you know, as a young person, like, you know, you got adults telling you what to do. You got teachers telling you what to do. You got all these other people. But when it came to me and the page, it was just like what I felt. And so that just felt very like freeing to me, you know? And so from that point, I kept writing, but I would say it was more of a hobby-ish kind of deal into and through high school. And then when I got to college is when I really started exploring it and I found spoken word. And so from there, like I really have been kind of, you know, been more consistent with it since then.
So what took you from poetry to spoken word? Because not all poets are spoken word artists. Like
True. Spoken word artists are traditional poets either, you know what I mean? They're poets, but not necessarily the traditional sense.
Right.
So my freshman year in college, we went to Winthrop University. You know, we're old friends, the Woo.
Yeah.
I'm a little older than you though. So when I got there.
A little bit.
Yeah, you know, a couple years on you. When I got there, I want to say it was my first semester, I think it was. But we had a poet named Kirk Nugent come to campus. And Kirk is an amazing poet, just a great person. And he like won all these awards and accolades. And I consider him like the godfather of spoken word because he's done so much stuff.
Yeah.
And I just remember feeling like, wow, this is amazing. You know, he's, you know, just his wordplay was just really good. And his intention to his words and his performance just really kind of sold everything.
Right.
And so I just like that night I went home and I just started writing something and I didn't know what it was going to become. And then next thing I know, this isn't, at that time I was still writing raps and I still do every now and then. I can give you a couple bars, but
okay.
I thought,
come on, you
know, but, but I thought it was going to be a rap, you know, and
because
I started and then it just kept going and it kept changed into something different. I'm like, oh, I think this is kind of what he was doing. And I wasn't really trying to do that. It just kind of morphed into that. And so that was when I got the bug, I guess. And I want to say it was maybe like a week after I finished the piece, there happened to be an open mic on campus.
Wow.
I went there and I read the piece and the piece was called Standing Ovation. And they also gave me a standing ovation the first time I did it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I want to feel like this all the time. You know what I mean?
What did you sign up for this, for the, open mic night?
Yeah, it was like an open mic night. So
what pushed you to do that, like to make you just like, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and just jump into it?
Yeah, well, I've always been a performer. So like, I grew up singing and like I said, I rapped and everything. So like performing wasn't really new to me, but I had this thing and I'm like, and I had let a couple people hear it.
Yeah.
And they were, you need to do something with that, you know?
Yeah.
So that really was gave me the confidence to go up there that day and just spit it. And then at that point, nobody knew who in the world I was on campus.
Right.
Like I was a, you know, whatever. I might have been a freshman sophomore, whatever.
Okay.
But yeah, like nobody really knew me, but I did that and it was like, whoa, who's this cat? And you know, and so that was a really great feeling. I remember feeling like I was on top of the world, you know.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's that you definitely have you're one of my favorite poets and spoken word artists. You already know that. But
thank you so much.
It's a gift because everybody can't just flow like that and have it naturally and really move people. So kudos to you for that.
thank you. So I appreciate it.
What's your writing process? I'll ask that. And like, what inspires you to like sit down, put pen to paper, or type on your phone or whatever you use? Like, what gets you in that mode?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It varies. Sometimes I would say in the past several years, I've been really trying to be more personal in my work, because I think at first I was writing a lot of social commentary kind of stuff.
Okay.
Still great, which is still needed, and I still do that.
Right.
But I put myself into it as much, you know what I mean? In terms of like my story or my exact feelings about whatever that thing was. Yeah. So with that being said, I think like a lot of times it may be something that has happened in my life that I think about and it causes me to write, or something I see on TV or a conversation I have with somebody, you know, something like that. Also was something that's really helpful for me is like reading other poems or watching other people do things, like other poets perform or whatever, or reading a poetry book. And then that might give me an idea that has nothing to do with what they're doing.
Right. But
it sparks creativity or whatever, or makes me think like, oh, I wonder if I did this a different way, like what if they would have done it like this? So maybe I can do it like this. So it really runs the gamut of, you know, whatever just kind of comes to me that really just sparks a fire and a light flickers on for me that makes me start writing on it.
Yeah, that's good. That's like, for me, if I hear a certain word, I'm like, ooh, I like that. Let's put that in something.
Yeah. And the thing is, it could be a word that you have always hear, but in that moment, it's like, Eureka. Okay.
Right.
Patience. Okay. I can do something with that.
It's the way it's like, you heard it, somebody said it, how they present it. It's like, you know what? Let's do something. So I completely understand that. You went from like doing social poetry spoken word pieces, and now you're trying to transition to do more personable.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Okay. So talking about that, I'm just making sure I get the name of your show right. It's From Tragedy to Triumph, one man show.
Oh,
is that correct?
Great segue.
Okay.
This, yeah. This.
Just trying to bring it together. Listen, okay.
You know what you're doing.
We do what we can. So I was able to, was it at the Rabbit in NOTA that I went to? Was that
the Rabbit Hole? It wasn't in NOTA. It wasn't in NOTA. It was, what's that area called? I want to say.
The what? I'm sorry?
The Plaza Midwood?
Yeah, Midwood. Yes. So I had a pleasure of going there. It was so good. It was just so good. Just to see, you know, like, okay, so we're acting in this too, like, okay, we're seeing different things. it was really emotional, heartfelt. It was just like this to watch you and then to know you personally and then, you know, tie all that in. It was awesome. So for those who haven't seen it or been a part of that, where did that come from? Why did you want to create that event or show?
Yeah, for sure. So From Tragedy to Triumph is the name of it. And So just to give a background for people that may not be familiar. So it was a one-man show basically talking about my personal journey into and through grief. And so it's pretty much inspired by my story. So I'm widowed. It's been widowed 3 years now.
Yeah.
And it was about 2 years and some change that I had been widowed. And so I just really, what inspired me to write the show was a year before a friend of mine, Jay Ward, who's an amazing poet. He's like number one poet in the world. I could go on about him. Good friend of mine. But he did a one-man show.
Okay.
And I was very inspired by it. And I remember that day after I watched his and went to it, I was like, man, this is amazing. Like, I don't know how you could do that. And he was like, no, you should definitely do one. You know, I could see you doing one. And I'm like, what would I do on, you know?
Yeah.
And I was still, you know, the grief was pretty, pretty fresh at that point.
Yeah.
And so I hadn't really even thought about, you know, writing something like that or what have you. And then somebody suggested, because at that point I was doing these Facebook Lives, live video.
Yeah.
Grief and stuff and resilience and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And somebody was like, you can just kind of compile your lives. Like your lives are kind of like a show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hadn't thought about that. So maybe like 7 months later is when I really took it seriously, when I saw the submissions for Boom, for the Boom Festival to do a one-man show. And so I sat down and I just, I had like maybe one poem, one of the poems that I did in the show, and then I wrote like three more. And like, this is really a story now, like, and it's really like a, you know, a monologue, you know. So fit it, and they liked it, I guess, and the rest is history. So it was a really amazing experience to do that. And again, and it came from somebody else watching someone else tell their story. So I'm like, well, if he had the courage to do it, and he's encouraging me to do it as well, why not put a shot in the dark and see what happens?
Right. Is that something you want to continue to change, to add on? What are you thinking with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been told by several people that I need to tour it.
That would be so good. Yeah. Yes, that would be.
More confirmation. That's more confirmation.
There you go.
Yeah. I feel really good about that. But you know, right now, you know, COVID happened and everything. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's pretty much a no for right now, but I really would love to, you know, make it a bigger production and tour it to different places. So I was actually looking at some other fringe festivals that I could apply to before everything, where I could present the work. So we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens when the world kind of opens back up and it's safe to travel a little bit more.
Right.
But I do that. Definitely want to expand that. And not really sure. I feel like it can become a bigger thing than just a one-man show. Not sure what that looks like right now, but I at least want to go to different places and see how it, you know, how it people respond to it in different cities and go from there.
Right. You know, I think that's so cool for not the circumstance for sure of how it came to be, but I think it's so cool that it takes kind of spoken word to another dimension for me, at least, you know, because you're used to just having somebody come up, spoken word, mic, and that's cool. I love that. But when you add all the other components, it really adds another dimension to it. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the benefits of it is that now I can call myself a playwright.
Yes. Add into the resume.
Yeah. I'm also an actor, kind of.
Yeah.
That's so true. So these are other like in skills and tools now I have in my bag. So not just be able to say I did it, but to actually have done it. Like I know what it takes to write a script. It takes to, you know, dedicate to acting in a role. And though it was my life, it still was acting, you know what I mean? And so that's some things that I really want to explore a little bit more, like screenwriting or playwriting, or, you know, being in the mix of that. Not so much the acting, maybe a little bit, but yeah, I definitely want to explore like using my writing in other avenues and just what I've been doing, you know, so to see where that can go.
Yeah, definitely challenges yourself too.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So we need to talk about a playwright class, because I'm very interested in doing that.
I'm not an expert yet. Let me put some more notches under my belt and then we can talk about that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's good. So with the one man show, I don't know if this came from that, but you do have, you're part of a podcast. It's called Young, Black, and Widowed.
Yes.
Did that come from that, or did you meet these individuals that way, or how that come to be?
Yeah. No, I actually met them before the one man show. They were able to come too. So
yeah.
So like you said, we're Young, Black, and Widow. There's three of us. Two of us are widowers and one is a widow. We all have our overlap is just really kind of crazy in terms of like when our spouses pass. So the female Shonda in the group, she's approaching her fifth year of being a widow.
Wow.
3 years in, and Shard, the other gentleman, he's 3 years in too. Okay. So what happened, Shonda and I went to college together. She's, I think, maybe a year older than me. And so when my wife passed, she reached out and was like, hey, you know, I've been where you've been. It's been 18 months since my husband passed away and that kind of thing. So, you know, I want to be a resource to you if you ever need me or what have you. And at first I wasn't really going to do that. I'm just not one of those people that just naturally reaches out to folks and everything. But when I really started thinking about it, I'm like, I'm going to need some kind of guidance.
Yeah.
No, in this thing, because I've never seen a young Black widowed or widower, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
somebody that's been there. And so she was like, you know, really like checking in and calling. And then unfortunately, about 3 weeks after my wife passed, Char's wife passed.
Oh my goodness.
And our stories are so, it's really eerie, like how similar it is, he and I, my stories. And so she already knew him, and then she connected us, and then we just started hanging out and just checking on each other. And then one day we were like, maybe we should do a podcast, y'all, because the conversations we have are just so good and so needed. And they're just so organic. It's not like we're forcing it. you know? And it's like, gave us the blueprint and gave us like the mold of how to navigate this thing. So maybe we can help other widows and widowers, you know, that are going through it. And so that show came out of a result of just our friendship and just, you know, talking every day and these different things we were experiencing. So, so it's been really great experience doing that with them. Mm-hmm. We took a little hiatus, but we're back. We actually just recorded the other night. Another episode will be coming out soon. So that's been a really, really good thing to create something like that, to do, you know, be in the podcast space for one, and to create something with people that you care about on a topic that you care about. So it's been a great opportunity.
Yeah, I'm writing down some things to make sure I ask you at the end.
Please do.
Yeah, otherwise I'll forget. No, that's so awesome. It's definitely needed. I mean, it's like I said, the circumstance is really unfortunate and it's awful. However, it's so beneficial that you all come together and then be able to just have those conversations for other people who don't have anybody to reach out to and just get insight, especially being so young. Like you said, that's not really familiar to a lot of people. So that's awesome that you all are doing that. So I haven't listened to it yet, but I will be. You're on my list. I know. My bad. I know. But it's on my list. I promise. Yeah. I'm gonna be on it and I'm gonna let you know. But
I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, for sure. Did they come to my book signing?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So I talked to them briefly. They seem like a really cool group of people. So
And some people, they're good folks. And we support each other. Like, you know, Shar is an artist too. He's a hip hop artist and everything. Yeah. So his shows and stuff. And so it's really a good, like, organic, true friendship. And so everything else just becomes easier because of that. You know, we have that foundation. That's been really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so good. So good. I do want to backtrack just a little bit because it's something I forgot to ask. I don't know if this is directly with your poetry or spoken word, but you do offer workshops.
Yeah.
That's for children, for young adults? What? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the answer is everybody. Yes, that's something I'm doing periodically, but especially since I've been poet laureate, like different schools and stuff have asked in the area, have asked me to come and just do some workshops. So literally right before Christmas, I did literally it was like a day when I went virtually visited some elementary schools in town. And we're talking about, that was really awesome.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it's cool. And the little kids are just so awesome, man. They just have a lot of energy and enthusiastic. Yeah. They treat you like you're a celebrity, even though you're not, you know what I mean? Yeah, so I have different things I do, you know, just talking about different topics. So it depends on the level that you're in, I guess, in terms of your proficiency with poetry and what you do with it. You know, away from a novice that's, you know, a kid, or to an expert, quote unquote, that's an adult. You know, I try to offer different things for different people there. And one thing I'm excited about is I'm starting in January. Well, it is January, isn't it? I'm starting this month.
I know, right? We're like a week in.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah. So starting this month, I'm doing this series called the Up Next Poetry Series. And so that pretty much is a workshop series / open mic for youth in the area. So the first half, we're going to talk about, you know, different techniques or skills for performance or for writing. And then the second half is the students, like, just sharing whatever work they came in with or that they created in the workshop. So I really want to create that space for young writers in Rock Hill, because there's not a lot of spaces for young poets. There's like older poet spaces, but not a lot of younger poet spaces. So I really want to cultivate that. So they have a community here.
Yeah, is that going to be virtual or in person?
Yeah. So the first thing we're doing is actually like a competition. So the Still Dreaming Poetry Competition. This is a shameless plug. Sorry, I didn't mean for it.
Do it. No, come on. Listen. That's so good.
So the first part of the series is the Still Dreaming Poetry Competition, and it's for middle school and high school students in the area. Mm-hmm. And so they have to, you know, write poems based, two poems, one based off of the theme, which is Good Trouble, and then the other based off of Dr. King's life, or just activism, civil rights in general. And so The students are going to, you know, they don't have to be spoken word poets or do it in a spoken word style, but it'll be graded off of not only how they, how the poem is written, but also how they recite or perform the poem.
That's so cool.
So it's going to have like a mixture of some slam poetry elements in it in terms of like how we're going to judge it and stuff. So yeah. I'm really looking for, that's going to be on the 16th of this month. So okay. Next Saturday. So I'm super, super excited about that one.
Yeah, that has to be yeah. so gratifying just to be able to do, like, can you, I don't know if you had anybody, I had nobody in elementary school come to talk about writing or nothing. Like the first time I've talked to an author, I think was in high school, and that was for a half a second. And then college is where, right. you know, I was able to do that. But that is yeah. That's so needed.
Yeah, yeah. It's really like a extra, not only is it a high for me, like I just enjoy doing that stuff, but yeah. it's a responsibility I feel like too. Right. Because like these, if you don't cultivate something, then it's going to die or it's not going to thrive properly.
Yeah.
So being like, if there's a spark there and you're a writer and you're young, but you don't know what you're doing, you just know yep. you like it. Then I should, as an older writer that knows a little something, you yeah. know, give assistance and some guidance to figuring it out yeah. from that, you know? And so a lot of people don't necessarily reach back, but I really believe in that because that's what happened for me. So right. if I hadn't, wouldn't be the poet that I am now or the person that I am now.
Yeah.
So I try to do that same thing to other folks.
That's so good. Like people don't know the power of writing, like to be able to get a kid interested in writing and keep them out of a lot of stuff, learning how to you know, deal with your emotions, everything. So, oh, that's yeah. awesome. That's so cool. So can we watch, can the public watch or is it just closed?
No. Yeah. Yeah. You can watch for sure. Yeah,
okay. So getting those links from you.
Okay, I got you. I will send that to you.
Yeah, sure. That's so cool. Very cool. Yeah. So anything else you want to add with poetry spoken word?
So one thing I haven't told you is that I'm working on a book.
It's about, come on, say it. Yes. Because it was on my list of things. I didn't send that to you. It's my list of things. Where the book at? That's what I was calling that. Because we've talked about that before. And I'm like, all right, Angelo. All right. You know, yes.
It's been over a year. It might have been 2 years when we had that conversation
yeah.
about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you wrote your book in the meantime and everything, which is amazing, by the way.
Awesome.
So the book is, I would say, 90% done.
That's great.
90 to 95% done, okay. And I have a potential publisher.
Come that's on, exciting. With it.
So that's exciting. So, yeah. Hopefully later this year, around summertime, it'll be out to the world. So I want to wait until everything's official to put the name of it and all that and stuff out. But I definitely will let you know about everything when that happens.
So just to make sure, it's poetry?
Yeah, it's a poetry book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to be so good. Yes, I've been waiting. So yes, that's so good. Good for you.
Thank you so much. I'm excited. I'm really excited.
Yeah. I mean, 90-95%. Okay. Listen, that's great because writing is we love it, but it is a task in itself.
Right. Yes, it is. Yeah. So I'm glad I'm at this point. I just need some, you know, some things and add some things and hopefully we'll be good to go. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely let me know. Cause I'm gonna get a couple copies and definitely broadcast it as well.
Right. I appreciate you.
Yes. I have, so my poetry book, it's done. I'm putting air quotes up. It's done.
Okay.
No, because I keep adding and taking away poems. Like, oh, wait, that'll be so good. Well, I got to wait to finish this one. I'm like, all right, you know what? We're going to focus on something else right now. So
it's a thing. I think a book is probably never done. It's just close to done.
Yeah, but see, poetry is different. It's different than like fiction writing, at least for me. So my poetry is very like you, it's very personable and you just have to make sure, you know, you're getting not just the message that you want out, but just how you want it to flow and you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the flow of it is definitely a thing. I never thought about that before. Like I had printed all the poems out and had them on the floor one day, which is like sitting like, all right, so maybe this one will start and this one will finish and these in the middle somewhere. Yeah, it's definitely an intricate process. But I think it's made me a better critiquer of poetry.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because like, I'm just being extra critical of every single poem and every single line. And
yeah.
The majority of the poems in this book, I didn't have before. So I think maybe I had three of them beforehand.
Uh-huh.
And since the pandemic, like late March, early April is when I started working on this. And so that's, it's been a real process in terms of just sitting down and figuring out this is the book I wanted to write. And I had like three other book ideas.
Yeah.
For like when I need to write. And so to be able to do that and just really look, reading other books at the same time and seeing what other poets are doing, it's been a real process to, you know, sharpen my tools, you know, and to be, make sure when I put it out to the world is ready and is right, you know, right. as right as it can.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what's up. Congratulations. Yeah. Coming. We there. We had the finish line, you know?
Yeah. We close. I'm trying to thank you at the book launch, you know?
Man, it's coming. It's going to be good too. Hopefully I can be front row and center. If not, I'll be right on the screens. Yeah. Either one is fine.
That's still front row.
Okay. Right, exactly. Anything else before I move?
No, I think that's it. That's all okay. I have.
If you think of something, just, you know, let me know.
Okay.
So we're going to migrate on to talk about education, which we're both in. Right. I think it's so, first of all, how did it feel to work for Winthrop? Like, how did that even, you know, come to be?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was one of my dream jobs to do that.
Really?
Yeah, it really is. Like, I didn't think I'd be able to do that, but I ended up being back here, so...
Right.
It was crazy. So I was working at a school called Newberry College.
Yeah.
And then this position came open. And so, and this is the exact position I wanted because it was, I was in the student activities board and everything. And I was the president of the student board when I was in college. So it was like, wow, you know, that position's open. I had applied one time before and didn't get it. And okay. I didn't get to the interview phase, but I didn't have my master's then. So this time, you know, I got the master's and everything. I've had more time. Yeah, you know, got the letters behind your name make a difference.
Okay.
Yeah. And then everything, you know, just worked out where I got the job. So that's been really, it's been really good. And I think for me, it's been different though. Like just the campus is so different and the students are different. The relationships are different. So it's just a learning experience too. A lot, like sometimes you can be stuck in the past. Like when I was here, we did all this.
So true.
But it has changed, you know, so it's made me adapt to a lot of things too at the same time.
Yeah, it would be very surreal for me. Like you have to get over that moment. Like, okay, I used to go here and all this other stuff. And then you start thinking about different things. Like, okay, this is a different time, different experience, like you said, and kind of embrace that.
Yeah, exactly. And I also learned that, you know, no school is perfect. You know, when you're a student, you think that, you know, it will depend on where you go and which, if you like your school or not. But for me, I Winthrop, you know, so like also it's just like any other place, it has its flaws and things too, so you got to maneuver through all of that at the same time, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
so that's what too is to have that awakening and that thought process, like, oh, okay, it wasn't, this is how everything happened before, like there was a lot behind the scenes that I never saw, you know. So that's been a very eye-opening and good experience for me too.
Yeah, you said you used the word awakening, which is the perfect word, because working behind the scenes, you're like, okay, so this is why that went down. And now being a professor, I'm like, okay, so now I understand why they were doing certain things. It's like, you can kind of see that flip side, like, okay, you know, you get it. So yeah, completely understand.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So for student life, I'm sure since the pandemic, you've had to do a lot of adjusting. What are some of the major things you had to adjust for the students? Or for yourself, or both?
Yes. So the first thing is that we've been working hybrid since July. So 50. So 2 days a week I work from home, and the other three I work actually in the office.
Okay.
So very big difference and big change, because, you know, normally in the office talking to students and everything and working with them. And so that's been, it's been good though. Like I've adjusted fairly well, I think.
Okay.
And I try to get most of the big work done the days I'm in the office, so that when I'm home, I'm not like over inundating myself.
Yeah.
Too thin. So that's, I'm kind of used to it. So when we go back to regular 100% that's going to be a change. So that's one thing. Also, we've been doing a lot of virtual events or hybrid events where we have stuff in person, but we also stream it via Zoom or whatever platform that we're doing, because capacity has changed. So like Tilton Auditorium, for example, that normally we have 500 students in it, we can only have 75 in there now. So
I got you.
Social distance and everything. So we can't even really service the same amount of students in the traditional way that we've been doing. So so Zoom and everything has really been our friend this year. And we had to be very creative also, like in terms of the types of things we've been doing. So that's been really good. And our events have been fairly well attended. Like we've met the new capacities every time. So that's a good thing. And we've been really like focusing on doing like giveaways and prizes and things like that for the students so that their buy-in is better and is good. Because if you're like a freshman, you don't know anything about anything.
So true. Right?
Yes.
No, no. You
know, right. Seriously, like you are really in the dark, you know?
Right.
So we've done a couple of things to try to make them feel a part of it and feel like invited and that, you know, this is their new home on campus. So so we had to adjust, but I think it's been pretty good for us.
Yeah. I haven't been in my office since March. There is no hybrid. We are home. I haven't been home since March. I don't know what I'm gonna do when they say I got to go back in there. I don't even know. Like today I was talking to a faculty member. She asked me, well, what my office number was. And I was like, I don't remember any of that. It's been that long.
Yeah.
So at least you get to go in. I have no idea where I'm at someday.
Yeah, it'll be a year in March, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Right. And they want me to go back in my office? I don't know. Like, I've been doing work on my patio. What do you mean? I don't know. It's going to be something.
Right. Now that you know you can do it from home, right. It's like, what am I going to work for?
Right. Clearly, I can do all of it here. So I don't know. That's going to be a conversation we're going to have. But anyways, yeah.
Imagine.
It looks good for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. Kudos to you for that.
Well, hey, you know, we're making it work.
Right.
We're making it work. So what is your favorite thing for student life or most gratifying thing for student life for you?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is the same for me. It's the students. Yeah. I really have just, when I was a student, like, you know, I was pretty involved, as you know, and did a lot of stuff on campus. And it was like the staff members on campus that just made me feel like I could just do that, you know, that I could really do my place and find my niche. And so I liked giving that same experience to students and helping discover who they are. Like, because being in the class is great, and that is one side of the education, but it's also just learning how to be a person and, you know, all these soft skills and things that they don't teach you necessarily in the classroom. So I really like being able to be that for students and giving them a real experience on campus. So
yeah,
it's good. That's like my favorite part of everything.
Yeah, that's good. Soft skills are so important. Adults are lacking that these days. So it's good.
Itself.
Okay. Yes. So that's good that, you know, you're instilling that in early because it's definitely needed.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So last question for education. Where do you see collegiate learning going, or the college experience going? I guess I'm not going to say when this pandemic is going to be over, hopefully soon. But I mean, either right now, do you think we're going to be moving when we are able to go back? Are we going to be moving still more towards virtual, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, it seems like it's shifting daily from what I've seen colleagues saying. But I honestly feel like one or two things are going to happen. People are going to stop going to college at the same rate, which has already started already anyway before this. That's the first thing. Or like for-profit or online institutions are going to just raise in the number of people that are going to, you know, enroll there and get out of traditional school. That because, like, you know, when you factor in tuition and stuff, you're paying for room and board, you're paying, you know, all these other lab fees and student activity fees, and that kind of all the extra money. And I think now more than ever, people really saw like how much that was compared to what we're able to give, you know, like, we sent students home in March too. And I think they did give them a discount on their tuition and stuff, but that's still like, well, why am I even paying that if I'm home and doing everything, you know? So I think a lot of people are going to have that same thought with to where they don't see the benefit in going to school or, you know, doing a non-traditional route via virtual or what have you. So I could see that. I could see. And that trend was already happening anyway, where like two-year colleges were getting more students anyway.
Yeah.
So I could definitely probably happen to increase them more.
Same here. I'm such, you know, I'm an advocate for education, but I'm not an advocate necessarily for going to a four-year school, even though I did. I think it really, what I would love to see is really honing in on what students would like to do in high school, like get them
first year,
really start talking to them for the next 4 years, let them do internships, like really get them involved, because the things I know now, I had no idea were available to me, and I'm a full adult, you know what I'm saying? I didn't know what my degree was actually going to be able to get me. And so I think it would be nice to hit that in high school. Like you said, I think we're going to be moving more non-traditionally. Being at a two-year school, I see students from 18 all the way to 60, 70, just learning new things, trying to, you know, work and then also go to school. So it's going to be interesting how that is. I know for us, we're offering a lot more online classes, a lot of 8-week classes now instead of a full semester too. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I could definitely see that too. Yeah, shorter semesters.
Yeah. Like you said, it's something every day. Like, we just, it's something different. So we'll see where it goes.
You'll see.
Yeah. So our last segment here, which we are flying by, is called The Little Things, which I love to do because it just lets people know a little bit about you. So I have three questions for you. If you want to add any other little things, feel free.
Okay.
So the first one is, you are a part of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. What sparked you to join that particular fraternity?
Good question. Good question. So know what you're doing. Yes. I'm really big on history, you know. So when I came to campus, I have Greeks in my family, but like mostly folks in sorority. So my mom, my sister, aka Delta. So I didn't really know, you know, if I was interested at all and then which one I would want to. So I just kind of looked at everybody.
Okay.
When I saw about, like, when I learned about what Alpha is about, like the history of it, I'm like, oh, that's interesting, because I'm big on history. And then when I saw the guys on campus too, like the brotherhood part is what kind of tied it in for me. So it just seemed like it had this inherent and just natural organic sense of togetherness and brotherhood that I just didn't have, you know, growing up. I have a brother, but I didn't have, you know, brothers, plural, you know?
Yeah.
And my friendships were, you know, small groups of people. So to have like this organization that's done all this historical stuff and to also have the brotherhood tied in with that was just something that really sparked my interest.
Yeah.
And I will say this too. I'd already kind of was thinking that, and then I went to this probate. I was like, man, I'm supposed to be on that line, man. God.
Okay.
You know? So that's what I call the aha moment. I think everybody has to have an aha moment that is like, yep, this is the one. So that sealed it all in for me, you know, on top of those other two.
Did I go to your probate? I think that was the, wait. When did you?
Follow six.
Yes, that was my very first probate. Well, I didn't know you, but yes. Yeah. You guys were in the tomb, right? Like in the, that was you,
carried us in from the
back. That was crazy. And this is from somebody, I don't have any Greek in my family at all. Didn't know, probably maybe one or two, just sororities. And so it was like a whole new world. So I was like, wow, people are really going in. It was cool though, but I enjoyed it. I was just like, I didn't know what to expect, you know? So you were my first one.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yep.
No, if I do say so myself, that's a good one to start for.
Listen, y'all had it together. I was like, oh my gosh, this is, wow. Okay, so this is what college is. Okay. So what is your, and I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this, but what is like your most memorable moment as an Alpha?
Oh man, most memorable moment
as an Alpha. Because it's probably a lot.
Good, Brittany. This is a good question. Okay. The one, I won't say the obvious one, which would be my probate. The one that comes to mind right now is, so in fall of 2016, I was director of membership intake for the grad chapter in Rock Hill.
Okay.
And so, because for those that don't know, the MPHC organizations, you can join like no matter how old you are after you graduate. So this is my first time doing that for a grad chapter. I did it undergrad, but never, you know, did it for this level. So it was really interesting because we had somebody literally that was the age of 23 and somebody that was the age of 46.
Wow. Okay.
So I had gamut of, you know, ages of men. These are grown men, you know, and so I was responsible for bringing them to the fraternity. And that was just a very different experience. And it taught me so much about it. Like, it reinvigorated my love. I already had it, but it just really enhanced the love I have for Alpha, because it's like, if you're 45, 46 years old, you're a doctor, you have your life, you know, you have a family and all that, and you're spending this money and you're doing, you know, going through the intake process for this, with something that you don't necessarily need, it means you have a love for it too.
Yeah.
And it just reminds you know, my love for it. And it's like, this is even greater than the love I had, because I can't say that if I was like 50 plus, you know, and never got to do it in college, that I would do it grad chapter. I would like to think so, but I don't think I would, you know? So that was one of my proudest moments, was being able to bring those guys over for the first grad chapter. And it was one of the first, if not the first grad chapter to have like a probate, Alpha grad chapter to have like a probate too.
Oh, nice. That year.
So yeah, so that was a really, really great experience for sure.
Oh, wow. You know, people don't really talk about grad chapter a lot. You don't really hear, I mean, you kind of hear it sparingly, but that's cool to be a part of. And then that dynamic 23 and you said 45?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know that was interesting, like, to have that dynamic.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. And what makes it more like of a memorable thing for me is that they're all active now. Like, one of those guys is the president of that same grad chapter now. Oh. You know what I mean? So to see them, like, become the alphas that they are, I feel like, I'm not going to take credit, but I feel like the seed was planted from what I was able to get them from bringing them in, you know?
Yeah,
so sure. That's the greatest, you know, compliment for me.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a perfect memory.
Thank you.
Yes. So yeah. Next little thing. So just like me, you are a dog parent.
Yes.
I don't know about yours, but mine is a little, he's a baby. He's 7 months and Ollie is a little crazy sometimes. I actually have him tucked away right now so you cannot hear him. And you have Lola.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about Lola. What do you love about being a dog dad, and just some things about her? And some challenges too, because I know it's not all roses, because I know.
Yeah. Well, Lola is a diva. She's 3 years old. Chihuahua Terrier mix. Mm-hmm. I think she tried to talk a little bit when we started the podcast. She was making some noise.
And that's okay.
I think it's been good for me. Like, just, I never really thought about owning a dog since I was like really little. But my late wife and I got her. And so, you know, when she passed away, I'm like, well, I need to make sure I keep her and do everything. So I think she's been really like a ride or die, like, you know, best friend kind of thing. She knows my intimate moments and probably don't know what's going on, but she knows like when I'm sad and angry and I'm crying and when I'm super happy, you know. So I think being able to take care of something really was really therapeutic for me, for sure. And in terms of like the negative stuff, you know, sometimes she just a little wild. 13 pounds, not like she's 300 pounds, barking at and don't do nothing. Like, she's not gonna fight you.
Oh my gosh.
Dogs all the time. I'm like, Lola, you know you're not that gangster. Like, you're not going to do anything.
The little ones are the feistiest, though.
Yeah. But for some reason, you don't mess with her because she looks like she's crazy, I guess. So,
gosh.
So it's good. It's challenging, but it's interesting for sure.
Yeah. And then I saw on Instagram, I know you didn't buy her a little sweater. Was it a sweater or a little? It's like, okay. You're definitely in it now.
Like, yeah, she was posed like she was a little model. What is she like? Laid out.
She loved it. She did.
Yeah, that was crazy. And I can't take credit. My grad, my grad assistant last year actually bought that for the big dog person too. So that was really cool.
Oh my gosh. Too cute. The only thing with Ollie, he won't let me put anything on him except for to go outside. I have a little jacket for him. And that's about it. And then I had a little bow tie. He wasn't feeling that. So I'm like, okay, you know, we're just going to do this jacket, go out, and then we'll take it off. That's it.
You know, dudes dog a little fickle sometimes, you know, so it's all right.
Yeah, he's a character for sure. Yeah,
I can imagine. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
You know, they can just run around or something.
What'd you say? I'm sorry.
They might have the Ranger play date where they can just meet and run around. Yeah. Or something.
Oh, they're gonna turn up for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. If nothing else, Ollie will play by himself and he got a partner. Okay, he's ready.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
We gotta set that up for real. So last thing that I have, let me see. I just want to make sure I'm on track with what I needed to ask you. So I'm just gonna read this verbatim because I like how it's arranged.
Yeah.
Okay. So what, in your opinion, is the key to success? That's the first part. So what is your opinion to the key to success? Is it confidence, taking a leap of faith, perseverance? How do you define success?
Do I have to choose one of those answers?
You can, whatever you want to say, whatever you want to give me from that, I am completely fine with.
Yeah. I think this is going to sound so corny, but I think it's actually a combination of all of those.
Hey.
I don't think you can be successful if you don't have some level of confidence and sense of who you are and what your level of success is.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's easy to fall victim to whatever everybody else deems as the metrics for success. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you have a lot of money, or if you have a lot of cars, or if you're a certain, you know, level of fame or celebrity, a lot of people focus success on that. But if that's not what is important for you, it's like you can get caught in those things and really abandon what you're trying to accomplish because you're trying to do what everyone else is doing instead of what you truly feel and what you know are capable of doing. So I think that's important. I think confidence and just knowing yourself. I think knowing yourself, being self-aware of what matters for you, you know what I mean? Despite all the things going on, I think that's really important. And so when you encounter struggles and challenges, if you're really into knowing yourself and knowing what you're trying to do, whatever this goal is, whatever things you want to accomplish, like, then you have to persevere through it because you see the other side of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really hard to see the other side of it.
There.
Yeah, it's hard to see the other side of the obstacles when the world's crumbling around you, you got debris and trees everywhere. It's like, well, how do I see past the chaos in front of me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you already had the vision, you already had the thought. So all you have to do is just see it through. And that sounds a lot easier than what it is, but it really is just that simple. It's going to be hard. But as long as you see it through, as long as you're confident in seeing it through, you can make it happen.
So where does confidence come from? Like, how do you get confidence?
Ooh, that's good. I think it comes from a number of ways. So for me, what makes me confident, I would say, is other people sometimes. Like getting validation from others that I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That's just me. Like some people don't care about validation.
Yeah.
And I don't it's not like something I have to get. But when I get it, it reaffirms what I think I already know. So like I'm proficient in this. I already know I have a plan. And when someone confirms it or reaffirms it, it's like, okay, I really am on the right track. And if you're a person of faith, you know, it doesn't have to be a person. It could be God or whatever higher power you subscribe to, you know, but I think that is something that can reinforce what you're trying to, you know, your confidence, because it's like, not only do I see it and feel it, but something else or someone else also sees it too. You know, I think that's where it comes from.
Yeah. Like it's not necessarily validation, like what you're saying. I think it's that confirmation component, because
right.
I mean, it's hard, especially when you are a creative, just to talk about the creative side of it, when you're a creative person and it's just you and you're, you know, presenting your stuff to yourself and you kind of walking through, I'm like, okay, does this make sense? Is this even moving to somebody? Like, I like it, but will anybody else like it? That's not really looking for a validation, it's just trying to confirmation of what
you're
doing, like you said. And so when somebody reads and like, oh man, you need to share this, or if somebody they start crying or they get emotional or whatever the case may be, you're like, okay, you know what? I'm doing the right thing. I'm on the right path. So yeah, that's just true.
Yeah. And you know, you saying that made me think about something else. I think consistency also breeds confidence.
Yes.
Like the more consistent.
How many people quit? Yes, it's true. I've been there. I was a quitter before. I had to, you know, get myself together. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, good. You good. You good. But the more you're consistent with something, it's like, you know, and you recognize the consistency, and you're continuing doing it at whatever that level is, it's like, oh yeah, I'm kind of doing my thing a little bit. You know, when you take a step back, and it's not like ego or being braggadocious, but it's like acknowledging that you've been consistent and focused on whatever this thing is. So that helps you be confident because you know that you've been consistent.
Right.
And you see the fruit of your labor and be consistent. It's like, okay, cool. I got this.
Right. That was good. Good insight. When did you feel like you could say that you were, I don't know how to say it. When did you feel like you were the spoken word artist? Like you knew that you can own that title. There it is. That's what I was trying to get to. When did you like own it?
Yeah, I would say I owned it in 2011.
Okay.
2012. And that's when I made my first poetry team. Mm. So in the slam poetry world, like you have these slam.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about it. I'm sorry. Yeah. We're going to talk about that.
Good, you're good. Yeah. So the slam poetry world, you have these competitions called slams, and there are individual slams and there's team slams.
Yeah.
So the individual slams, you do your poem or poems, and then you get judged by a group of random judges. And at the end, the person with the highest score wins. And it's more intricate than that, but that's the overview of kind of how it goes. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So just question, are the judges spoken word artists as well? Are they just random regular people or
a random person that literally is off the street that
that's crazy.
They're randomly selected from the audience. I've been in slams where literally there were no people that were in the audience, so you stood outside like, hey, we're doing a slam, do you want to be a judge, get in for free and get a judge some poems? All right, cool.
Yeah,
it's literally been like that.
That's more difficult, honestly, because you don't know these people like poetry. You don't know where these people, you know.
Wow. Exactly. Really, you got to be on your game because you don't know who you're going to encounter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. With the job.
So you do the slam again, and we can probably do another deeper dive conversation about it because I could talk for hours on how slam works. But at the end of the competition, the winner, you know, wins, the person with the highest score. And so what happens in terms of the team slams, you compete in so many individual slams to make the team.
Okay.
So when you make a poetry team, you compete against other poets from other cities. So like literally like Boston has one, California has several, San Diego, New York, who we compete against a lot. Different cities in Florida we compete against. Baltimore is one of our like friendly rivals.
Yeah.
So you compete against these poets from all over, you know, the nation, and then they have like regional and national competition, and then, you know, from there you can win or compete in whatever for whatever titles. So in 2011 was the first time I actually made a team. I've been trying for a couple of years. Always got close, but never made the team. And so that was the year that I made it, and I was like, okay, great. And I was honestly probably just happy to be there. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And we worked on poems together. You do like what you call group pieces, which are poems with two or more people. So we did a lot of real.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really, if you've never seen one, you definitely should check it out. Like so we did that and we really put the work in, and then we did really well. We didn't win that first year, but we showed very well. And I just remember feeling like, yeah, okay. I feel like now I'm kind of official, because but I've competed against poets from all over the nation that are some of the best in the world, and held my own. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't drowned or felt like I was out of place. Mm-hmm. I felt like I belonged, and I got respect from those same people.
Yeah,
and that's when I think I first started feeling that, and then it just kind of got reaffirmed more and more as I just kept competing and everything. But that's the point when I really started owning the title spoken word artist, performance artist, what have you, from that point.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here listening. I'm just so proud of you. Just listening to it, I was like, man, you definitely doing it. That is awesome.
Thank you. The journey, man, you know. And in some ways, I think I still have a lot to prove, you know.
Yeah.
Some say I don't, but I think I do. So that fuels me too. It's like I still want to accomplish a lot of things mm-hmm. in the genre and as a poet in general. Like I really want to do some literary work, you know, like in writing more books and doing things like that as well. So I'm fueled by like trying to do more than what I've already done, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good to have that.
Yeah.
You keep challenging yourself. Otherwise you'll just be complacent, you know? So.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
That's so good. Dropping gems, man. Dropping gems.
I'm trying.
Okay. So before I wrap up here, or we wrap up, what I'm going to ask, and of course you answer however you want to answer, what advice would you give to aspiring writers, poets, spoken word, whatever genre you want to attack? And then also, what encouragement would you give to those experiencing grief? And that could be grief on different spectrums. But if you could leave us with two notes from that, that would be great.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So for the first one, to aspiring writers, I would say for one, write. Like just write.
Okay, just do it.
Yeah, do it, because that really is a big barrier sometimes.
Get out your head.
Yeah, sometimes even like for me, like it happens a lot when like, oh, I have an idea, but like, no, I can't write it because it's not ready yet. And you know, it has to be the perfect poem every time. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as the perfect poem, but you can get better every time. So just get over that fear and put something. It doesn't have to be a full poem or whatever, or article or a novel or a short story. It doesn't have to be a full thing. Just get something on the page. I think that takes care of a lot of things. That's step one. Mm-hmm. And then when you get past that and you start writing consistently, get a circle of people that you trust that are also writers, mm-hmm. that you look up to, that you respect, that are your peers, but you know that you also like, I need to do more of what this person is doing, or I wish I could do like that, you know? So that way you all are sharpening each other's skills.
Yeah, that's good.
That's really important. A poet one time told me that what separates a good poet from a great poet is the company that they keep. Mm-hmm. And I got that. And I'm like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Because
if I'm only dealing with people that's on my level or below my level, then I'm never going to get better. Because I'm already above them or on the same level as them. But if I have folks that are some of the best in the world or that I regard as that, then I'm going to keep sharpening and trying to be better. So find your collection of people that you aspire to. Look for opportunities to enhance your writing to, workshops, classes, whatever. But just be consistent with all those things. If you're calling yourself a writer, then really dedicate and commit to it in every way.
That's facts.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. I don't have nothing to add to that. Mm-hmm. You hit it.
And in terms of the grief one, man, you know, we're really going through what I would call a collective grief right now with 19 and it's all different levels of grief, right? Especially with the things that happened early this week. And
yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know, so I think for one, it's similar to what I just said with the writing, is find your tribe. That's really important, I would say. And embrace the feeling first, like embrace whatever that feeling is. A lot of the time, especially for people of color, like we feel like we gotta hold back what we feel and we can't show weakness and, you know, all these other things that we make up our minds. But really showing emotion is a strength, you know?
Yeah.
So be okay with allowing those feelings to come however they come. Mm-hmm. And then once they come, now you have to find a way to deposit those feelings. Like, so you have to find a collective of people or find activities or find counseling. You know, you have to find somewhere to deposit those emotions, because if not, you're just going to have them all stuffed in and then they're going to burst at the seams and come out in ways that are explosive or, mm-hmm. or dangerous, you know? So definitely find that, find those folks, get some help if you need to.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing wrong with counseling. Counseling is cool. I promise it. Promise you, I've done it.
And it's been super helpful.
You know what I mean? It's so needed. Like it's really needed.
It's a safe space. That's why I try to tell people, like, whatever you think, whatever you believe, just try it one time and get you somebody that you can relate to and you vibe with. It's, yeah.
Yeah, and we all do it anyway. We talk to our friend, boy, homegirl, whatever, and tell them what's going on, when we meet somebody that ain't had no business, we had no business dealing with, but we're dealing with it anyway, or somebody on our job.
Yep.
You know, crazy. We do it anyway with our friends, so it's just a professional friend.
Right. That's it. That's all it is.
Look at it. So so yeah, get that help, man. I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. Find a way to deposit your feelings and channel them, and then, you know, use that energy to do something productive, whatever that is for you. Because I know for me, like, I'm trying to not go on a tangent, but for me, it was hard to do things that I enjoyed for a while.
Yeah.
So because like that joy, a lot of that joy was tied up in her or things,
that's,
you know,
she,
with me, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to discover new things that bring you joy. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to be anything super crazy. You can find new shows on TV to watch. You can, you know, paint something. You can make a collage or a vision board. You know, it can be something really super small. Mm-hmm. But find something to give you an outlet, so that you can get those things out.
Yeah.
Then that's really important.
Yeah, that's such good advice. I mean, everything you said was good.
Thank you.
The part at the beginning that really got me, because it took me a long time to do that, is to address and embrace the feeling that you're feeling.
Right.
For me, I'm like, nope, I don't want to be sad. Let's move on. Oh, I don't want to be angry. Let me move on. It's like, nah, you really need to go through that.
Right.
Embrace that, no matter how uncomfortable or hard it is, so that you can progress and move on from that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And what you can do too, you know, like, that's very well said, Brittany, but what you can do is too, is like, create a safe space around that. So like for me, I've kind of got to the point now where I can feel that I'm going to have a moment. Mm-hmm. And it's so crazy, because sometimes I can feel it like a week beforehand. Mm-hmm. I'm like, mm-hmm, something's coming. It's going to happen soon. Mm-hmm. So I try to set up like safe spaces in different places. So whenever it happens, I'm able to, you know, go to wherever that is,
yeah,
and let it out, mm-hmm, be free, you know, because you just don't know when it's going to happen, when it's going to hit you sometimes. Yeah. So that's important, creating those spaces, like that safe haven. It doesn't have to be anywhere crazy. It could be,
yeah,
driving your car, you know what I mean? Or for me, I have different places in town I just go to and I sit for a minute or what have you, if I need that moment. So just finding those spaces where you can do that.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
That's smart to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually need to do that. Like, I have safe, my safe space is, well, either it's me in my notebook or me on my phone in my notes. That's my, my first safe space. But actually having a tangible place to go to, that's good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. 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 I think it's good to have another thing in case you need to get away from your phone for a minute, right, or away from your house. You know, you have another place that's not tied to anything else.
Yeah, that's good. Good stuff, Angelo. Good stuff, as always. I mean, you know, that's how we do, you know?
I'm smart sometimes, you know.
All the time. So before I sign off, we need to get your socials together.
Okay.
So I need you to tell me, well, I know you have a website, so tell us about the website, where you, I'm just jotting down to make sure I say everything. Instagram, Facebook, let us know also about the podcast, and then any other thing you want us to know that we can get to get in touch with you, or, you know, to know what's going on.
Yeah, sure. So website, angelojeter.com. Okay. So there I have a list of, you know, a typical website, bio, accomplishments, those kind of things. But I also have a list of like the workshops and things that I offer. The one man show is on there, like not the video, but like talking about what I do with that and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So you can know a little bit more about me. You can contact me if you want me to do something like a show or a workshop or what have you there. Socials are at iambic, which is EYEAMBIC. EYEAMBIC, and that's on Instagram, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook is Iambic Poet, and I'll bring my name, Angelo Jeter, up too.
Okay.
And then I have a Rock Hill Poet Laureate page, so it's
okay. At Rock
Hill Poet on everything, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Okay. And the podcast?
Oh, yes, thank you. Yeah. They would kill me if I didn't say that. So
that's what I'm here for.
The podcast is Young Black and Widowed on Facebook and YBW Charlotte on Instagram.
Okay. Are you all on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, things like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so we just do YouTube. So if you go to YBW Charlotte on YouTube, you'll find us there. Or Young Black and Widowed, either one, you'll find us on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. That's And I'll definitely I'll get the links for the, it's the Up Next Poetry. Is that, am I saying that right? What's the title of the event?
Yeah, so Up Next Poetry Series is the name of the series. Okay. And then the competition is called the Still Dreaming Poetry Competition.
Okay, so and when is that one?
So the competition is going to be on the 16th of this month, of January. And then from that point on, the Up Next series with the workshop and open mic is going to be every second or third Saturday of the month for youth. Okay. Yeah, so posting on that too. And I, you know, I should also mention that I'm recording a podcast with some friends of mine, my friend Aaron, my friend Jeremy. We're also doing a podcast called Degrees of Men. Ooh. So we kind of,
yeah,
salacious, you know.
I like that though. Okay.
So we talk about, like, you know, a male perspective on different things. So we talk about, like, a lot about relationships and dating and just relationships with women in terms of, like, how you just navigate those things. But we also have moments where we talk about, like, you know, like how to be a man. We weren't told how to be a man.
So
you know, you had growing up, and you know, how you be a mentor to somebody else. So it's really good. It's some funny moments. It's good stuff. We haven't released it yet, but we've already started recording episodes.
Yeah.
So I definitely will send you that once we officially put it out to the world.
Listen, you're going to have like a paragraph under your name of all the stuff you got. Goodness, it's all good stuff though. Hey, that's all that matters. It's all good stuff. Okay.
Trying to.
Yeah, no, that's gonna be so good. Men need that. Like, seriously. Yeah, they need that outlet, and then, you know, to know what's up, and having other people to relate to too. So that's so important.
Sure.
Good stuff. Anything else you want to add before we go?
Okay, one thing I did forget is that I do a lot of stuff.
Go ahead.
So in May.
Okay.
Putting together a poetry festival in Rock Hill.
Oh, nice.
And so it's called the One Word Poetry Festival. We are working on a website and everything, but it's going to be 3 days from the 21st to the 23rd of May. We still plan to do it in person. It'll just be limited audience and socially distanced. And so we're going to have, like, you know, open mics, workshops, have a keynote reading from Jericho Brown, who just won the Pulitzer Prize for poetry.
Yeah.
A reader as well. So it's gonna be a lot of really amazing things that for those 3 days. So it'd be the first poetry festival in Rock Hill, and we're going to crown our first youth poet laureate for the city of Rock Hill.
Oh, that's so cool. That's wow.
Yeah, so we're working, we're trying to do some good stuff. So I'm really excited about all of that. We're working really hard on it.
Yeah,
and final touches on everything.
I am so glad Rock Hill is only 20 minutes away. That's so I will be there all 3 days.
Right.
Yes, definitely. Please keep me updated on that for sure, because I want to be in the building for that.
Definitely will. Definitely will. That's all. That's it now. I promise.
Okay. Hey, listen, like I said, it's all good things. I am happy that you have all that going on, you know? So,
yeah, I appreciate your support. Always.
Yes, I'm jotting down my notes like I always do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on Life with Brittany, a Peculiar Podcast. It's just been fun. Like I said, we always have great conversations when we're able to talk. And so thank you for being part of season 2.
For sure. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you all for listening. Hope you didn't get bored or anything by me talking to you. I appreciate it. Seriously, thank you so much.
Yes. All right, everybody. Until next time, y'all have a good one.
All right. See y'all.